ॐ सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः. Very good. Welcome back. We're continuing our study of Bhagavad Gita. We're coming very near the end of chapter 1. Let's begin with some recitation, the final section of chapter 1. Repeat after me. Yadyap yete na pasyanti, yadyap yete na pasyanti, lobhopahata chetasaha, lobhopahata kulakshayakritam dosham, kulakshayakritam. Mitradrohe cha patakam, mitradrohe katam nagneyam asmabihi, katam nagneyam paparasma nivartitum, paparasma kulakshayakritam dosham, kulakshayakritam prapashyad bhirjanardana, prapashyad bhirjanardana kulakshaye pranashyanti, kulakshaye kuladharma sanatana, kuladharma dharme nashte kulam kripsnam, dharme nashte adharmo bhibhavatyuta, adharmo bhibhavat adharma bhibhavat krishna, adharma bhibhavat krishna pradushyanti kulastriyah, pradushyanti kula strishu dushtasu varshneya, strishu dushtasu jayate varna sankaraha, jayate varna sankaro narakayaiva, sankaro narak kulagnanam kulasyacha, kulagnanam patanti pitaro hyesham, patanti pitaro lupta pindodakakriyah, lupta pindodakar doshairhe thai kulagnanam, doshairhe thai kulag varna sankara karakaihi, varna sankara utsadyante jati dharmaha, utsadyante jati dhar kuladharmascha shashvataha, kuladharmascha shashvataha utsanna kuladharmanam, utsanna kuna manushyanam janardana, manushyanam narake niyatam vaso, narake niyatam bhavati tyanushushruma, bhavati tyanushushruma aho batamahat papam, aho bat kartum vyavasita vayam, kartum yadraja sukha lobhena, yadraja sukha hantum svajana mudyataha, hantum svajana yadi mama pratikaram, yadi mama pratikaram ashastram shastrapanayaha, ashastram shastra dhartarashtra rane hanyus, dhartarashtra hane tan tan mekshematram bhavet, tan mekshemat sanjayo vachas evam huktva arjuna sankhe, evam huktva arjuna ratopastahupavishata, ratopastahupavishata visrijya sasharam chapam, visrijya shokasam vigna manasaha, shokasam vigna manasaha. Very good. You can see we've come to the very last verse in our chanting. We still have about 10 verses left So let us return to where we left off. And we had finished in our prior class. Oops, we're back before that. Yes, yeah, so we had finished verse 37. We'll continue today with verse 38. Before we do, any other cell phones? Please be sure they're off. before we return to these verses, I always give an introduction. There are several very nice questions that were placed in the question and answer box, and it would be a nice way to introduce today's class because it kind of looks back at some of the topics we've already seen, so it'll set the stage for today's discussion. One question was about how is it that this Mahabharata war was indeed a Dharma Yuddha, a righteous war. And remember, we define that Dharma Yuddha in that narrowest of manners. A Dharma Yuddha is only in the case in which not fighting the war causes more harm. That's such a narrow definition. How can we be sure that this was a Dharma Yuddha? After all, we think that the war was for the sake of restoring the kingdom to the Pandavas. They were rightfully the owner of the whole kingdom. In fact, there's a story I forgot to tell. We'll include that story right now. So they were rightfully the owner of the whole kingdom. As a result of the dice game, after they came back, they were supposed to receive half the kingdom. So half and half. So that seemed perhaps appropriate. But then, as it turns out, they were deprived even of that half. So you might think then that it appears from a very cursory study, very superficial study of the Mahabharata, it might seem to you that it was a war to recover their kingdom of which they had been usurped. And that's the conventional understanding. Of course, it happens to be wrong. This was not a war, let's be very clear, this was not a war over real estate. Nor, in modern times, to make a reference to modern times, nor was it a war for oil-rich real estate. Notice that countries don't fight over any real estate. If it's empty, useless desert, who cares? But if there's oil underneath the ground, watch out. So a conventional understanding might be it was apparently a war over real estate to recover the kingdom for the sake of the Pandavas. That's actually a misinterpretation of the story. The Mahabharata is an incredibly complex story. And to understand it properly, you really have to go very deeply into the complexities of the story, which means everything that came before is important. And one of the things that came before is highly instructive in understanding the nature of the war. This was maybe several days or weeks before the war actually began, where Yudhishthira sent Sri Krishna to meet with Duryodhana, to meet with Dhritarashtra as an emissary. So Sri Krishna was taking the role of emissary. So he was sent if he met with Dhritarashtra or Duryodhana. It actually makes little difference. Was it? Dhritarashtra. Good, thank you. So Sri Krishna goes to meet with Dhritarashtra to try to negotiate a peaceful settlement. That's reasonable. Reasonable people do reasonable things. Yudhishthira is reasonable. So he sent Sri Krishna as an emissary to go and negotiate a peaceful settlement. And Sri Krishna presents to Dhritarashtra the argument, the whole situation, the whole situation in which rightfully the Pandavas should have at least half the kingdom. And of course, Dhritarashtra says, no way, we're not giving them half the kingdom. And then Sri Krishna wants to negotiate a peaceful settlement. In negotiation, you have to give up something. So Sri Krishna suggests, well, if you won't give them half the kingdom, As an alternative, give them a portion of the kingdom with five villages. There are five Pandavas. Each get their own village. So if you won't give them half, which they rightfully deserve, then give them a portion of the kingdom that contains five villages. Dhritarashtra refused. He won't give. Sri Krishna is still trying to negotiate a peaceful settlement, so he suggests, well, if you won't give them a portion of the kingdom with five villages, why don't you give them a small village with five houses? One small village, and in a village there's only five houses, they can each have their own house, and in this way we can avoid this terrible war. Dhritarashtra refused. Absolutely refused. Sri Krishna is still trying to negotiate a peaceful settlement, so he finally suggests, well, if you won't give them a small village with five houses, then at least give them one house with five rooms. At least they can each have their own room. Dhritarashtra refused. I won't give them 5 square centimeters or whatever was their unit of measure. So absolutely refused. Now, it's an interesting story that reveals something if you really think about this story. If it were truly a war over real estate, if it was truly a war to recover the kingdom, why would Sri Krishna, as emissary for the Pandavas, be willing to negotiate everything except for one house? Why would he be willing to give up in negotiation essentially the entire kingdom? So from that story, it becomes extremely clear it was not a war to recover the kingdom. It was not a war to restore the Pandavas, to maintaining possession and control of the kingdom. It wasn't a war over real estate. That should be very, very clear. It was a war between dharma and adharma. The bottom line is that under the rule of Dhritarashtra and the coming rule of Duryodhana, the people of the kingdom were suffering terribly under this unjust, immoral, adharmic leadership. Those stories are not commonly told. In fact, they're not prominent in the Mahabharata. But a deeper study of the situation reveals that the people of the kingdom were suffering because of the corrupt leadership. So let's be very clear that the Pandavas were fighting not for the sake of reclaiming the kingdom and gaining power and gaining all the goodies of the kingdom and real estate. It was truly a war to restore dharma to the land. And for that reason, this is definitely a dharma yuddha. This is the only reason because it's a dharma yuddha. Okay, good question. Then, why are Arjuna's relatives not fighting on Arjuna's side? Good question. Why do they fight on the other side? Specifically, Bhishma, of all people. The wisest, how ironic. Who knows dharma better than Bhishma? He is the wisest of them all. And yet, he's fighting on the wrong side. What in the world is going on? Well, this reveals, again, the complexity of the story of the Mahabharata. And to answer that question with regard to Bhishma, you have to go back not a few days before the battle. You have to go to the very beginning of the Mahabharata, where it tells the story of Shantanu, Bhishma's father, and how Bhishma got born. And the fact that later Bhishma, I won't tell it, the whole story will go on forever. So you might remember a story in which Bhishma made 3 vows in order for his father to get married. And one of the 3 vows is he would remain loyal to whoever was king. At this point in time, for a very complex set of reasons, Dhritarashtra was king. Dhritarashtra should not have been king, but for a whole variety of complex reasons, Dhritarashtra ended up being king. He was the least qualified one. When Pandu died, Vidura could have become king. Bhishma should have become king. There might have been other possibilities, but a mistake was made. Dhritarashtra became king, and Bhishma had made that vow to be loyal. So Bhishma was caught up. Drona was similarly caught up in the politics of the situation. In fact, that's the answer to the question, why were some of Arjuna's relatives fighting against him? And the answer is politics. That's just what it is. Politics plays out not only on a national stage, politics plays out within families. Some of your own families, I'm sure. You have your own political problems. You have your own factions. In some families, this happens. There are factions, and they strategize and fight against each other in all these subtle ways. It happens. So, very complex story. So why did some of Arjuna's relatives ending up fighting against him? Politics. Which were the three worlds talked about by Arjuna earlier? When Arjuna says, I wouldn't fight this war even for the sake of the three lokas, the three worlds. That's a very common expression in any Sanskrit text. The three worlds always refer to this world, Bhuloka, the heavens, Swarga, and whatever lies in between, called Antariksha. So the earthly world, the heavenly world, Swarga, and the intermediate world, Antariksha, is always what the three worlds refer to. Last question. Gosh, I don't think we can get into this too much. Swamiji, if India were to wage a war against Pakistan, would it be a Dharma Yuddha? Wow. Okay, we're not going to get into a big political argument here, but we can certainly apply the principles we've learned and discussed. Can you really make an argument that not fighting against Pakistan will cause more harm than fighting against Pakistan? In a current situation, it would seem utterly impossible to make that kind of argument. You know, to fight against Pakistan, especially, you know, both countries are nuclear armed and, gosh, pretty scary stuff. And, you know, these border skirmishes, it's terrible, but it's not really full-scale war. So to wage full-scale war on Pakistan, even in response, let's get real. In fact, can we take a few minutes to discuss this, because there's a parallel. A parallel to the situation between Israel and Palestine. Here's a scenario. Suppose Pakistan engages in a campaign of terrorist attacks on India. Suppose. There have been a few incidents already, we know of very well. But suppose it's escalated and there's a constant stream of terrorist attacks on India. India has a dharmic responsibility to protect herself against these terrorist attacks. So now the question becomes, would supposing there were a larger number than now, now it's already a problem, but suppose there were a greater number of attacks, would the greater number of attacks justify an invasion of Pakistan? You have to work it out. You actually have to work out the numbers and consider the consequences. And, you know, the consequences of invading another country are, well, you can imagine what the consequences of invading Pakistan could be. Further, you have to consider what other alternatives are there. Are there other ways of shutting down these terrorist attacks? You know, Israel did something very clever. They were getting these small rockets that Palestinians were shooting at them, the terrorists, Palestinians were not shooting. Terrorists were shooting these small rockets into Israel. So Israel, they have a lot of high-tech geniuses there. They designed a system that can actually track a rocket in the air, give you warning that it's coming, and at least in some percentage of the time, shoot it out of the sky. So, which means Israel developed a better countermeasure to reduce the amount of terrorism. So let's be very clear that these are not simple issues by any means, but these issues can be understood or approached with a very simple principle. And that is, evaluate the consequences of any proposed action and be really sure that you are taking the course of action that causes the least harm for everyone involved. Everyone involved includes millions of Pakistani villagers and millions of Indian villagers living in that part of the country. So it's the people who are caught in between who are often the unwilling victims of warfare. So in any situation, all of the details have to be considered, and the bottom line is to choose a course of action that leads to the least harm for everyone. And everyone here would include Pakistanis as much as Indians. Okay, so no more politics. Except that the whole of the Mahabharata is politics. So we're kind of stuck with it. All right. Those are good questions. If you have any further questions, please feel free to put them in this question answer box. And I'll either answer them before class, after class, or weave them into the class. But these have been very good questions. Now, we're ready to pick up the thread of our story. And where we left off is Arjuna requested Sri Krishna to drive the chariot out on the battlefield. Arjuna looks across the battlefield and for the first time recognizes that he's about to enter into mortal combat with his own family members. And the realization of the horror of that situation causes Arjuna to suffer what we might call an emotional meltdown, or more clinically, a panic attack. Arjuna, and remember the comment we've made several times before, that before the first arrow was fired on the battlefield, Arjuna was already incapacitated. We saw this two classes ago. Before the war had even begun, Arjuna was incapacitated. He fell, he dropped his arrows and bows, he fell to the seat of his chariot. And Arjuna was incapacitated not by an enemy weapon. Arjuna was incapacitated by his own emotional reaction. Then, as we proceeded, we began to saw, and this is what we're going to pick up right now, we began to see how Arjuna's turbulent emotions were starting to distort his reasoning, distort his judgment. That's very dangerous. If you remember that Ratha Drishtanta, the chariot metaphor, shows that the buddhi, or intellect, is that part which is capable of making decisions. The part of us which is capable of evaluating a situation, of considering different alternatives, and choosing the best of the alternatives, the part of us that's designed for that is buddhi, intellect, not our emotions. Our emotions are useless at evaluating situations. Our emotions are useless at considering different alternatives and choosing the best alternatives. Emotions are designed for feeling, for responding to situations. So if we were to make a decision, if Arjuna were to make a decision based on his emotions, he would probably be making the wrong decision. But what's happening and what we're going to see right now is how Arjuna's emotions are starting to conquer his buddhi. It's a little bit like, and I may have used this term before, maybe not. It's a little bit like, suppose the charioteer gets hijacked. Hijacked by his own horses. How's that? The charioteer is hijacked by his own horses. He's pulling the horses. Come on, stay on the road, stay on the road. And the horses are pulling stronger than he is. And those powerful horses dragged the chariot off the road, down towards the ditch and towards certain disaster. Imagine what happens when a charioteer is hijacked, as it were, by the horses. Well, that's what happens to us all when our power of reasoning is hijacked by our emotions. That's a very nice way of putting it, very vivid way of putting it. Our power of reasoning gets hijacked. Why? When our emotions become so intense, so turbulent, that they start to overwhelm our thinking, overwhelm our reasoning, and it leads to, I think we talked in our last class about rationalization. We missed one class. We had our Deepavali celebration. So before that, did we talk about rationalization in the class before? I'm seeing blank. No, I didn't use that term, rationalization. Good. So we'll talk about that in today's class. In fact, let's see this present verse, and then we'll talk about this rationalization. So the general context is Arjuna's reasoning is being overwhelmed by his emotions. His buddhi is being hijacked by his emotions. Let's see how that plays out for Arjuna. Verse 38. Yadyapyetena pasyanti, yadyapyetena lobhopahata chetasaha, lobhopahata kulakshayakritam dosham, kulakshayakritam mitradrohe cha patakam, mitradrohe. Okay. The sentence continues in the next verse, but let's see the first half of the sentence. Yadi api ete. Oh, this would be good for our Sanskrit class. We have all these nice sandhis. So our Sanskrit students, can you break it apart? Yadi api ete. Na pasyanti. Yadi, suppose. Ete na pasyanti. Suppose these do not, na pasyanti, don't see, don't understand. These who is talking about the Kauravas. Suppose even, he says, even if, yadi api, even if, ete na pasyanti, even if these Kauravas don't understand, even if they're not thinking clearly. Why aren't they thinking clearly? Lobha upahata chetasaha, because their chetas, their minds, are upahata, overcome by lobha, greed. So the Kauravas, whose minds are overcome by greed, Arjuna says, even if they don't understand what? Kulakshaya kritam dosham. Even if they don't understand the dosham, the problem, the defect, of kulakshaya kritam, of krita, doing or causing, kulakshaya. This is the topic that we're getting into right now. Kulakshaya, kshaya here means destruction of the kula, of the family. Arjuna is recognizing that the whole family is going to get destroyed because they're all on the battlefield. No, basically the only ones who aren't on the battlefield are women and children. Everyone else are on the battlefield. And Arjuna is smart enough to know that there's going to be massive casualties on both sides in this war. So Arjuna is recognizing the terrible disaster that's about to beset the entire family. Both the Kauravas and Pandavas are all related. And this is Kulakshaya, the destruction of the family. And Arjuna's recognizing this impending disaster about to take place, the destruction of the family. So Arjuna then reflects on, even yadi api, even if they don't understand, they, the Kauravas who are overcome by greed, even if they don't understand the terrible sin of destroying our own family, mitra dohe cha patakam, and if they don't understand the patakam, the sin of mitra doha, of rising up against your own friends and family. biting the hand that feeds you is the English expression. So even if the Kauravas don't understand how terrible it is to cause a destruction of the family, how sinful it is to rise up against your own friends and family, the second half of the sentence is in the next verse. Katam nagneyam asmabihi, katam nagneyam paparasma nivartitam, paparasma kulakshayakritam dosham, kulakshayakritam. Prapashyadbhir janardana, prapashyadbhir. Katam, how, asmabihi, by us, nagneyam, how could we not understand? Let's make the connection. Prior verse says, even if the Kauravas don't understand how wrong this battle is, so at least we should understand. Katam nagneyam asmabihi, how could we fail to understand? Paparasmat nivartitum, how could we fail, nivartitum, to refrain, asmat papat, from this terrible sin? How could we fail to refrain from this battle, from this terrible sin? What terrible sin? Kulakshayakritam dosham, the sin, dosha, of kulakshayakritam, of destroying one's own family. Prapashyadbhir, by us who understand, we see, we understand. Prapashyadbhir, by us who are seers, by us who understand. Janardana, O Krishna, even, just to paraphrase now the two verses, even if the Kauravas, whose minds are overcome by greed, even if they don't understand the terrible sin of destroying our family, then how can we fail to understand the terrible sin of destroying our family? How could we fail to refrain from this terrible sin that we are about to commit? Now, this is not Arjuna's thoughts. He is saying this out loud to Sri Krishna. Janardana, O Krishna. So, let's reflect on this. We discussed before, I think. Let me put it in the terms of a question. Does Arjuna, in his heart of hearts, know and understand that this war is indeed a dharma yuddha, that this war is not for the sake of regaining the kingdom, it's not for the sake of retaliation? After all, the Kauravas tried to kill them, the Pandavas, several times. So you might think, oh, it's retaliation. So Arjuna did, the question is, does Arjuna truly understand that this war was not to reclaim the kingdom, this war was not a war of retaliation, but in fact it was a war to restore dharma? Arjuna was not just a mighty warrior, he was a highly intelligent warrior. Sometimes our idea of a warrior is somebody who is really big and really dumb. That wasn't Arjuna. So Arjuna was the star pupil of Dronacharya. So Arjuna was not merely a good warrior and a strong, valiant warrior. He was brilliant. Arjuna was certainly brilliant enough to understand that this was a war to restore dharma. He understood that in his heart of hearts. Deep down, he recognized this was indeed a dharma yuddha, and the consequences of not fighting this war would be far best. Arjuna understood that well. Then what is he saying? Then why is he saying, what's wrong with us? Why don't we get it? Why are we here on a battlefield ready to destroy our own family members? What's happening to Arjuna's reasoning capacity? This is the issue. You can see Arjuna's reasoning is getting distorted by his emotions. Arjuna knows well that it is a dharma yuddha, but now he can't perceive that clearly in the moment. Does that sound familiar? In the moment of crisis, when you are in a moment of crisis, do you think clearly? That's the issue. sometimes when we're, what is the expression? In the frying pan. When things are really tense, when a situation is really chaotic and crisis, at those moments, it's hard to think clearly. In those moments, our emotions have been so stirred up that it's easy for our intellects to be overpowered. We talked about the horses hijacking the charioteer, the emotions hijacking the reasoning. That's exactly what's happening to Arjuna right now. His emotions have grown so turbulent and so strong that it's starting to distort, or even, let me use a strong word, it's starting to pervert his reasoning, to distort it in a really negative manner, leading him in the wrong direction, leading him in a really dangerous direction. And then there's something worse that's happening. In these words, katam nagneyam asmabhihi, when he says, how can we not understand? Is Arjuna expressing how he feels? This is tricky, watch this. Is Arjuna talking about his emotions in these two verses? Or is he making an apparently logical argument? This is, if you've studied this, it's really fascinating. So Arjuna is overwhelmed by his emotions. Is that what he's telling Lord Krishna right now? Oh, Krishna, I'm really overwhelmed by my emotions. I can't think clearly right now. That's not what he's saying. In fact, what Arjuna is doing is giving rational, apparently rational arguments for not fighting the war. He's starting to invent excuses for not fighting the war. Arjuna knows in his heart of hearts that he must fight the war. He's starting to invent excuses for not fighting the war. This is called rationalization. I thought I might have talked about it here because it was a topic recently for teenagers. This is a favorite topic for the teenagers. I take them through that chariot metaphor in great length, and we end up talking about rationalization. What is rationalization? Rationalization is when we use our intellects, we're supposed to use our intellects to keep us on the right track and make the right decisions and do the right thing. Suppose we use our intellects to give ourselves an excuse for doing the wrong thing. That sounds silly, right? To use our intellects to give ourselves good excuses, to invent good excuses, to do the wrong thing. You're thinking, come on, Swamiji, we don't do that. Oh, yeah? Have you ever said, these are the favorite three words that talk about rationalization. Some of you know this. The favorite three words, just this once. Have you ever uttered those three words? Just this once. Just this once is a great example of rationalization. When you utter those three words, it means that you know what you're about to do is wrong. You know. Otherwise, you won't say those three words. Just this once, so you admit what you're about to do is wrong. And you give yourself an excuse to do it anyway. What is the excuse? That I won't do it a second time. But the fact is that if you do it once, you're much more likely to do it a second time. So it's not even a good excuse. It's a poor excuse. As we'd say in modern times, a lame excuse. Good. This is rationalization. Just this once, you admit it's wrong, and you give yourself a lame excuse to do it anyway. Your emotions are tugging at your intellect. Your intellect should remain firm and keep you on the right track and do the right thing. But instead of keeping you on the right track, your intellect is hijacked by your emotions, and your intellect is then employed for the sake of making up a lame excuse for you to do the wrong thing. Rationalization. Intellect hijacked by emotions, is used to make up excuses to do the wrong thing. This is our definition of rationalization. This is exactly what's happening to Arjuna. Notice, he's making logical arguments. He's not talking about his emotions. He's not saying, oh Krishna, how sad it will be to kill all our family members. He has already said that, but that's not what's happening right now. He's saying, oh Krishna, look at this situation. It's going to result in the death of our family members. Now, bear in mind, dharma yuddha means not to fight the war is even worse. That's our context. Not to fight the war is even worse. But Arjuna is trying to turn it around and make it seem like fighting the war is worse. In modern times, we say putting spin on the situation. Arjuna is trying to spin the situation so that he can do what he wants to do, and what he wants to do is leave the battlefield. This is dangerous, this is harmful, this is rationalization. Let's see how that rationalization plays out in Arjuna's mind. At this point, we can see that his intellect has been hijacked by his emotions. So Arjuna is now using his intellect not to do the right thing, but he's using his intellect to make up excuses to do the wrong thing. Let's see some of his excuses. Verse 40. Kulakshaye pranashyanti, kulakshaye pranashyanti, kuladharma sanatanaha, kuladharma sanatanaha, dharme nashte kulam kritsnam, dharme nashte kulam, adharmo bhibhavatyuta, adharmo. Kulakshaye, when the family, so his argument from the prior verse is that the family is going to get destroyed. Kulakshaya is the expression he's using, but again, bear in mind, not fighting the war. Definitely many family members will die, fact. But the context is not fighting the war is more harmful. In spite of that, Arjuna argues here, kulakshaye, if our family is destroyed, if our family members are killed, then what? Pranashyanti kuladharmaha. Kuladharma, the dharma of the family, the traditions of the family, the laws of the family, which are sanatanaha. These are traditions which have been passed down from generation to generation for countless years. Sanatana could mean eternal, not eternal. They've been around for a long time, generation after generation. These family traditions and conventions and laws have been there. But all of this kula dharma, these traditions, family traditions, pranashyanti, are going to get destroyed. Remember, this is Arjuna's rationalization. Arjuna's using his intellect to argue for the wrong thing, to make up excuses to do the wrong thing. So he says, if the family is destroyed, then the family traditions will be destroyed. Dharme nashte, and when the family traditions are destroyed, kulam kritsnam, the entire family, adharmaha abhibhavati uta. And when the family traditions are destroyed, kulam kritsnam, the entire family, abhibhavati, will be overcome by what? Adharma. The entire family will be overcome by adharma. Wait a minute. This whole war is to remove adharma. Now Arjuna is starting to argue, if we fight the war, we're going to be overcome by adharma. Arjuna's thinking is, you would say, ulta. It's completely backwards. He's got it completely reversed. But this demonstrates how severely our reasoning can be distorted when our emotions are really cranked up. Just to make that point very clearly, they talk of crimes of passion. A fairly ordinary person, when put in a ridiculously horrible situation, might be driven to grab a gun and murder someone. crime of passion. We're talking about an ordinary person who would never dream of doing such a thing. But you put that ordinary person in the right situation, a situation which is insanely difficult, full of conflict, where that person is just overwhelmed by chaos in their minds and full of such stress and tension that the person is on the brink of insanity, which we'll say. Such a person could be driven to commit what would be called a crime of passion. In that situation, that person might take a gun and kill someone. How could that? To kill was a decision. It wasn't accidental. If there's a gun laying there, do you accidentally pick up that gun and shoot it? You don't accidentally pick up that gun and shoot it. In fact, a person goes and has to find the gun and then comes back with a loaded gun and shoots it. It's not an accident. It's intentional. Absolutely intentional. Driven by a decision-making process. But here's the thing. Driven by a decision-making process that is utterly perverted by these emotions. Passion. Crime of passion. This is what happens. This is what's happening to Arjuna. This is what can happen to any of us in a moment of crisis. This is certainly what's happening to Arjuna. Let's see how he continues to rationalize and his intellect has continued to be distorted in the next verse. Adharma bhibhavat Krishna. Adharma bhibhavat Krishna. Pradushyanti kulastriyaha. Pradushyanti kulas. Strishu dushtasu varshneya. Strishu dushtasu var. Jayate varna sankaraha. Jayate varna. So the prior verse left off that when the family traditions are destroyed, then the entire family will be overcome by adharma. Prior verse. This verse, adharma abhibhavat Krishna, O Krishna, and when adharma prevails, when we are abhibhava, when we are conquered, when our family is conquered by adharma, then what will happen? Kulastriyaha, the women of the family, pradushyanti, will be defiled. And the defilement that he's talking about will become clear in the next part. Strishu dushtasu varshneya, varshneya, O Krishna. Strishu dushtasu, when our women are defiled, what will happen is varna sankara jayate. There will be a varna sankara, an intermixture of varnas, of castes, of ethnic groups. This is a very interesting argument Arjuna is making right here. He says, you know, families have different parts, different factions, right? He says, let me recast this in very modern terms. We don't like that part of the family. They're all adharmic, they're really lowly, they're very crude. I don't know what's wrong with those people. By the way, I've heard this from I'm sorry to say that I've actually heard some of this. So somebody has complained, "Oh, Swamiji, you don't know how that part of my family can be, and this person is like that, that person is like that. Something's wrong with all of them." Now look at this. Arjuna's argument is, suppose if our part of the family intermarries with that part of the family, oh God, how horrible would that be? This is Arjuna's argument. Varna Sankara literally means intermixture of these ethnic groups. Arjuna is worried about intermarriage with Pandavas and Kauravas. Does that really, you know, to a modern mind, does that really sound like such a horrible sin to Arjuna? It is such a horrible sin. In his mind, it's a horrible sin. This is rationalization. This happens a lot. Sorry to say, this happens a lot in times of war. We rationalize in this way. We've seen this too many times, sadly. We, meaning us modern American folk, we are very cultured and ethical. And us cultured, ethical Americans would never kill other cultured, ethical people. We would only fight in war against people who are uncultured and unethical and lowly and adharmic. We would never fight against good people. Then, I'll just give you my experience as a young man growing up in this ethical country during the Vietnam War, where we were not fighting in Vietnam, we were not fighting against the villagers, we were fighting against mostly the villagers, and the Viet Cong fighters were villagers who were recruited for fighting. They didn't really have a big professional army. It was all guerrilla warfare fought by North Vietnamese villagers. North Vietnamese villagers who were simple, good village folk. Ethical. But us ethical Americans would never fight against ethical village folks, so we weren't. In the Vietnam War, we were fighting against gooks. Gook is a word invented by our military people to dehumanize the North Vietnamese that we were fighting against. And the reason the North Vietnamese were dehumanized in this way is so that all the young American soldiers could be ethically convinced that it was okay to fight against and kill these North Vietnamese. This is rationalization. You make your enemy look like demons, like rakshasas. The enemy is like us, is the reality of the situation. The Pandavas are like the Kauravas, is the reality of the situation. But it's common in a time of war to demonize the enemy. We did so in World War, in the Vietnam War. It's been done throughout history. The opposite side has always been demonized. They're unclean, they're impure, they're not as cultured as we are, they're not as civilized as we are. These kinds of accusations have been made throughout history, where the opponents have been demonized. Arjuna here is demonizing his opponents, not for the sake of fighting a war, but for the sake of not fighting a war. But nonetheless, his opponents are being demonized. He's saying, if there's Varna Sankara, if there's mixture of our family members with that part of the family, that is the most horrible thing Arjuna can think about. And it's horrible because he's demonized the Kauravas. So further evidence of distorted thinking, further evidence of rationalization. And he continues. Arjuna is really building a big argument here. Sankaro naraka yaiva, sankaro naraka yaiva, kulagnanam kulasya cha, kulagnanam kulas, patanti pitaro yesham, patanti pitaro, lupta pindoda kakriyaha, lupta pindoda kakriyaha. So, Varasankara, this intermixture of the families, of the castes, Narakaya Eva, will just lead you to hell. That's what he says. This is how badly he looks upon this intermixture. This intermixture, Narakaya Eva, is only going to lead us to hell. Lead us to hell. Lead who to hell? Kulagnanam. Those who kill the family, Kulasyacha, and the family. The killers and the killed. Everyone is going to hell. That's a paraphrase of what he just said. We are all going to hell. Pandavas, Kauravas, we're all going to hell. Is that a rational, reasonable statement? It's like someone saying, the world is coming to an end. This is sometimes called catastrophic thinking. Catastrophic thinking means instead of thinking about a situation rationally, you keep thinking about what is the most horrible possible thing that could result, even if it's the most unlikely thing, and could be, even if it's the most unlikely thing, you think about that and that alone. For example, this is a lousy example, but it strikes home. In a little while, you're going to go home. Driving on these New Jersey roads, it's bad news. There was a bad accident here on Route 27 the other day. The road was closed. Ambulances are there. Every day, people get injured and worse on New Jersey roads. You're sitting here thinking about driving home. Swami Tadatmananda is talking about accidents and people getting injured and dying. And you start thinking, you won't do this, but somebody could start saying, oh God, I'm going to die on my way on my way home from class today. On my way home from Gita class, not only am I going to die, but my whole family will be together in the car. We'll all die. And then at home will be my little son or daughter. She'll be all alone and she'll be crying. This is catastrophic thinking. Everyone in your car is going to die on your way home today. Yes, anything is possible, but how incredibly unlikely that is. That is catastrophic thinking. It's thinking about the worst possible scenario, no matter how unlikely it may be. Arjuna is engaging in catastrophic thinking right now. We're all going to hell. That's what he just said. You can see how severely Arjuna's thinking is distorted. And before we'll finish up the section shortly, but just to really get something important here, Arjuna is this mighty, well-trained warrior. Intelligent, well-trained. He is subject to this kind of distorted thinking. Then what about everyone else? Have you undergone the kind of military training and discipline that Arjuna has? So Arjuna, because of his training, is perhaps more resistant to this kind of distorted thinking, which means less trained people, less disciplined people, ordinary people, can be even more likely overwhelmed by emotions, more easily hijacked. Does that make sense? Arjuna is relatively resistant to having his intellect hijacked because of his discipline and training, but people who are less disciplined and trained are more likely to have their intellects hijacked by emotions. Be on guard. Okay. The verse finishes. Arjuna continuing with his catastrophic thinking. So not only are we all going to hell, but he says our ancestors are also going to hell. Ancestors are going to hell? How can that happen? That's his argument. Patanti pitaraha hi esham. The esham pitaraha, all of their ancestors, patanti, will fall. The ancestors, pitara, will fall. Why? Lupta pinda udaka kriyaha. Because they have been lupta, they have been deprived of kriya, of rituals, of ritual offerings of pinda, rice balls, and udaka, water. That is, they have been deprived of the rituals of shraddha. Now, you have to understand the thinking in ancient times. The thinking was that when you do shraddha, these offerings for the ancestors, that your prayers, your blessings are somehow transferred to your ancestors to help them go up in spiritual life, to help them have a better rebirth. Which is why you had better do lots of rituals for your ancestors, because you want them to have a better rebirth. They're your own family members. Arjuna's argument here is if our family is destroyed, if our traditions are all destroyed, then we're going to stop doing these rituals. And instead of helping our ancestors have better births, they're going to have worse births. They're going to fall, and they could fall as far as hell. So to paraphrase this verse, Arjuna says, not only are we all going to hell, even our ancestors are going to hell. That's what he says. How distorted is his thinking? Then, doshar hetai kulagnanam, doshar hetai kulagnanam, varna sankara karakaihi, varna sankara ka, utsadyante jati dharmaha, utsadyante jati dharmaha, kuladharma shashashvataha, kuladharma shashashvataha. Doshaihi etaihi, because of these sins, etaihi doshaihi, because of these sins which are varna sankara karakaihi, these sins which cause the varna sankara, these sins which cause the intermixture of the families, because of these sins, kulagnanam, for those who destroy the family, utsadyante jati dharmaha. Not only will the family dharma get destroyed, but the jati dharma. Kula dharma, family traditions. Jati dharma, here jati would be like the community. Not only will your family traditions be destroyed, but jati dharma, the entire communities, ethnic community, we would say in modern times, the entire community's dharma, traditions, values, will all get destroyed. Utsadyante. They will sink down. Kula dharmaha cha shashvataha, along with the kula dharma. So along with the family traditions, kula dharma, jati dharma, community traditions, larger traditions, larger conventions, laws, principles, values, all of these values will get destroyed. Arjuna continues with his catastrophic thinking. It's going to affect not just the Pandavas and Kauravas, but it's going to affect all these lands. It's a much broader effect. And utsanna kula dharmanam, utsanna kula manushyanam janardana, manushyanam narake niyatam vasaha, nayate niyatam vaso, bhavati tyanushushruma, bhavati tyanushushruma. Arjuna is really stuck on his going to hell. Because he's back, right back to it. Utsanna kula dharmanam, for those whose kula dharma, for those whose family traditions and values, utsanna, have faded. Those whose family traditions and values have faded, have been destroyed. Manushyanam janardana, for such people, O Krishna, narake niyatam vasaha. Narake vasaha, dwelling in hell, vasaha dwelling, narake, in naraka, in hell, dwelling in hell, niyatam, is certain. Absolutely going to hell. Bhavati, it will be thus. Iti anushushrama, thus we have heard. That definitely, if your family traditions are destroyed, you're definitely going to hell. This really shows how badly Arjuna's thinking has been perturbed or even perverted. We're going to stop here, but when we meet next time, we'll finish this first chapter and perhaps start on the second. But you're going to see in the next class the epitome of distorted thinking. The epitome of distorted thinking. Arjuna is going to propose suicide. I'm not kidding. You may not interpret it as suicide, but I'll help you to see how it really is. In fact, nowadays they call it suicide by cop. What is that? You get the police to respond to you, and then you pull out your cell phone and you aim your cell phone at the police. And what do they can't make out that it's a cell phone. And what do? They shoot the person dead. They call this suicide by cop. Arjuna is going to propose in two more verses suicide by Kaurava. He's going to propose that he goes unarmed and stands before the Kauravas and let them kill him. How distorted is that thinking? And that's what we'll see in the next class, and then perhaps we'll be able to begin with chapter 2. All right. Some announcements. Oh, I mentioned beginning chapter 2. Before the next class, it'll take some time. I'm going to be preparing the next set of slides. So these slides have been nicely prepared. Volunteers formatted the slides, and then I've added the translation. And it's my own translation that we're adding. And these slides, as I mentioned, are available on our website. You can print out your own copy. By the end of next week, before the next class, the slides for Chapter 2 will be available. So if you'd like to print out your own copy of Chapter 2, maybe check our website late in the week. And the slides for Chapter 2 should be available. Tomorrow is Sunday. We have our children's classes at 11 o'clock. And actually, we haven't done bhajans for a while. We'll be doing bhajans tomorrow. Some very interesting bhajans. I've collected a number of bhajans, which we've never done before. They're all brand new. They include a stotra in Sanskrit that I composed, so that'll be one of them. It includes an old filmy bhajan, if you enjoy that kind of thing. And it includes, I think, a Gujarati bhajan, which we haven't done here before. So if you would enjoy some bhajans, and come join us tomorrow at 6 p.m., and we'll meet in the old hall for bhajans tomorrow at 6 p.m. If anyone that you know who is a regular here who's not here and enjoys bhajans, perhaps you could let them know. This is very short notice. Also remind you that with regard to tomorrow's classes, daylight savings time will begin, so make sure you check your clock before coming for classes. Okay, we'll conclude with our prayers.